Howard, when I was a kid, about 200 years ago, sometimes it feels that
both of us.
I one day saw a bunch of ants in their anthill. And I don't know why I did it, but I smashed it. And I just knocked it down and leveled it flat. And the thing must have been about, I don't know, 4 inches tall. And I just leveled the thing, and they all went scurrying. And I went on my merry way. I did it. The next morning, as I walked past the same place, the anthill had been built up again.
Amazing.
And I then didn't step on it this time.
Right.
I started watching them, and I started collecting them, and I started learning. It was one of my first episodes of getting interested with science.
Right.
The question is that I never was able to realize, how and why did they build that back up so fast?
Well, because you were looking at the outer lip of a pretty vast ant colony. That ant colony was probably anywhere from 2,000 to 20,000 ants, and it had built an underground structure of tunnels. I mean, you know this from an ant farm.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the tunnels are under, I mean, tunnels are underground. I've never seen an overground tunnel. But
well, wait a minute. Could be a wormhole.
Yes, except in the mountains.
Yeah.
That's true. It could be a wormhole. But at any rate, the ants had built a huge structure. If you had managed to destroy that structure, the one underground, well, you know, that would have been the death of the colony. But the fact is that at the lip of a colony, an ant colony like that basically has a little pile of the stuff that it's dug out, in other words, the dirt that it's dug out in order to make its tunnels. And most ant colonies have a little a trash heap where they throw out things that are no longer needed. In other words, if they bring in seeds and it turns out it's the wrong kind of seed, it's not useful, it's thrown into the trash heap. If sometimes the body of an ant, a dead ant, will be carted out and thrown on the trash heap. So all you'd manage to do, thank goodness, was to eliminate the trash heap. And they were able to reconstruct it again. And they were able to reconstruct it because when you've got 20,000 workers and you can coordinate their movement, and ants do, ants are able to do all kinds of things.
Do you think they were upset with me for what I did?
Yes, if they had been more aware of you, they probably would have. If they had stingers, they probably would have stung you. If they could bite you, they probably would have bitten you. Ants can be very formidable, and you know that some ants actually have, they morph. They morph into warriors. The warriors are twice the size
True.
Of the ordinary
yeah.
members of the colony.
Are they, when you just said something interesting, if they were aware of me, don't you think they saw this big kid coming by? I mean, who is
well,
this thing?
Well, remember, ants are tiny little things, and they're probably watching your foot come along. Your shoes come along, but I would think that your shoes come along a little too fast for them to have an instantaneous reaction. What they do have instantaneous reactions to is a colony of marauders.
So,
and then they organize for war, and then they get serious.
So they probably didn't notice me. Is that the same thing with humans? Is there a bigger picture here?
There is you hit it. I mean, that's really what cultural evolution is all about. Those little ants, let's switch to termites for a moment. Termites have a habit. It's an obsession. They just can't help it. It's like us reading newspaper headlines about stories that have to do with sexuality. They grab our attention every time. We have no idea of what larger purpose that may contribute to and what larger role it may play in collective evolution. Well, in the same way, termites have this little obsession, and it's they walk by a little brick. Ants excrete little bricks. You know, they don't go to the bathroom the way that you and I do. They're much neater about it.
Bricks.
So when an ant comes across one of these little fecal bricks,
I'm learning more from you than I probably want to know, Howard.
Yes,
but that's
right. Well, and we're trying to avoid nasty language here because this is radio. But at any rate, when one ant runs or one termite runs across one of these little fecal bricks, she gets fascinated with it and she picks it up. Then she looks around to see if there's another little fecal brick that she can put it on. Now, if she sees one little fecal brick she can put it on, well, she has a certain urge to do that. But if she sees another pile that has two fecal bricks on it, then she's even more anxious to put her little contribution on the pile. And if she sees one with 5 or 15, she's hit the jackpot. That's how she really enjoys herself, is adding one more brick to the pile with 15 bricks. Well, by the time you've got all of these ants doing this seemingly personal, trivial, little obsessive-compulsive habit, what they've done is they end up building columns. And those columns, what start as 15 of these little bricks, become 150, and 1,500s of these little bricks. They become very tall columns. And once the columns reach a certain height, then the obsession of the ant changes a little bit. For some reason, the ant wants to add to the width of the pile. She wants to spread the pile out up at its top toward a neighboring pile until finally the two of them meet in an arch. And all of that is the basis of wall building and arch construction for a hive that will end up being anywhere from 6 to 12 feet high, that will end up being approximately 6 to 7 feet deep, that will house 20 million termites, that will be so incredibly well architected that it will have rooms inside with a certain degree of moisture so that they can, so the ants can raise mosses and other small plants. They raise their own food. And another chamber in which the carbon dioxide level is very specifically monitored, or not, you can't say monitored, but it's controlled. It's controlled so that it gives maximum comfort to the queen, who is busy giving birth to as many eggs as she possibly can.
How do they know how to build this without a sketch, without
plans? That's a good question. There is no architect. There is no sketch. And there is no picture in the individual termite's mind of what she is doing. All she knows is she is fascinated with this little brick, and she wants to put it onto the highest pile possible. Well, when we talk about things like the Mabartin school trial, when we talk about things like our absolute obsession with Monica Lewinsky headlines, the same kinds of things went on in France, an absolute obsession with sexual scandal, and ultimately it led to the French Revolution. We are following our own individual obsessions, and without knowing it, in some way, we are contributing to the larger shape of a society no architect is determining the shape of. It's coming from our actions. Unless, of course, you want to say the architect is God, and in a sense, the architect is always God, because what are we all? Manifestations of God.
True. True. It just, it has always amazed me how they perform that way.
Right. So the question the cultural evolutionists ask, or at least that my kind of cultural evolutionists ask, is to what larger structure are we contributing as we do go about our individual deeds, as we go about our own individual passions, our own individual fears, as we go out after our own individual selfish things, and as we do our own individual altruistic things? What do these tiny little things that we do all contribute toward?